Supporting WHYY, the Rutgers Camden MBA degree allows for specializations in critical areas such as finance, international business, marketing, entrepreneurship, and others. Evening and Saturday classes are held at the Rutgers Camden campus and Camden County College. An information session is on Tuesday, June 23rd at 6 p.m. at Camden County College in Cherry Hill. Details at mba.rutgers.edu or 856-225-6452. Rutgers School of Business, Camden. Expect more. Be more.
$300 million. That's how much additional money the School District of Philadelphia has asked lawmakers for next year. I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. First up this evening, the budget request from the district is a big number, and big numbers can make eyes glaze over. So WHYY's Laura Benchoff asked members of one Philly public school what more money would mean for them.
Northeast is Philadelphia's biggest high school. Almost 3,000 students attend a school designed for 2,400. And today, a lot of them seem to be violating the dress code.
Where's your tie? Come here. That's your shirt in.
So that's their rebellion. They keep their shirts out.
And while you're at it, tuck your shirt in, please.
Principal Sharon McCluskey, all business in a pinstripe suit, says to cope with budget cuts, the school has had to be strategic.
Okay, so not all of our kids take 4 years of language, so maybe we will cut a language teacher this year, and knowing that we're going to have to pick one up again either the following year or the year after that.
Another area the school has cut back? Supplies.
You know, we have some history textbooks that have Bill Clinton as the president.
With more money, McCluskey says, they'd be smarter about what classroom materials they spend it on. Here's a hint. It wouldn't be textbooks with Barack Obama in them.
We would start to get Chromebooks for each ninth grade classroom. And then that way, you'll have the most up-to-date information. We won't need to keep reinvesting in textbooks that become obsolete within a year or two.
Still, she beams with pride when detailing all of the programs her school offers.
We recently opened up a marketing management group where we're going to be able to have kids from all over the city. We have another program where we identify kids who are interested in different audiovisual graphic design. We even have kids designing video games.
Northeast is a true comprehensive high school, offering something for every student. But it has to look outside of its budget to provide some of those niche programs.
We have to, you know, beg, plead, scrimp to get a lot of things.
Alan Wolf teaches business skills at the school. He's locked down 2 years of funding to start a sports marketing program.
The hook is the word sports, okay? But they're getting the intro to business and entrepreneurship.
Standing outside the cafeteria during lunchtime, McCloskey says they've had to cut back on support staff like noontime aides and counselors.
They're more than just people who move kids in the hallway. They can be that person who notices when students having a bad day. Talk them down when they're having, you know, some type of negative interaction with another student.
Those cuts have put more work on the back of remaining staff, like counselor Katrina Kinning.
I think on my caseload, it's about 850 kids.
Kinning has a big smile and a couple of charm bracelets jangling on her arm. She says a smaller caseload would help her work on students' problems before they get out of hand.
Grief, a lot of grief, insecurities, low esteem, motivation, girls, social skills, and study skills.
If the school district gets the full amount it asked for, Northeast would be able to hire 18 people, including 9 noontime aides and 1 more counselor. But McCluskey says it's still anyone's guess how much additional money the district will receive. And the range is huge.
So yeah, it's between, yeah, 0 and 250 some million. So right now we are planning that that the teachers that they said that we're going to have next year, we're planning and moving forward with that.
And at least for now, she says she's not planning on making any cuts. For WHYY, I'm Laura Benchoff.
Education was issue number one for Philadelphia's slate of mayoral candidates leading up to this month's election. And Jim Kenney, who emerged victorious, made access to high-quality pre-K a big part of his platform. Let's go to school with Sharon Easterling, Executive Director of the Delaware Valley Association for the Education of Young Children. Sharon, thanks for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
I know you were following the election, and you know that of the 4 ballot questions facing Philly voters, the one receiving the most votes called for creating a commission to come up with a funding plan for pre-K?
We are really at a turning point in this country. For many, many years, we have recognized childcare as a need for parents to go to work. What's beginning to happen and what's beginning to change in our society is that we recognize that high-quality early childhood programs are really transformational for kids. They change kids' lives, especially children who are growing up in poverty and their life trajectory is not very positive. But because we have not really invested in quality programs, we really are behind the curve right now. And so we have an issue. Only less than 20% of our programs are high quality in the city of Philadelphia and actually across the nation.
What are the primary impediments to creating high quality pre-K care in Philadelphia and elsewhere?
Well, the chief impediment is that we just don't fund it adequately. So the best way to compare is if we spend $10,000 to $12,000 on the K-12 system per child, we're spending $6,000 to $7,000 per child in the early childhood sector. If you got 50% of the resources for, you know, and it's a much longer day, it's a full year, and it requires a much higher staff-child ratio, the resources are just fundamentally inadequate.
Mayor Michael Nutter sat down with Marty Moskowain on Radio Times this week, saying any mayor can use the bully pulpit to set the tone, but has at best limited avail to, in this case, devote funding to pre-K. Where do you go to try to make the case?
Well, that's part of what the commission is going to look for. They're going to try to study possible ways to generate revenue. So we've got to figure that out. Look, it's going to cost money to do high-quality pre-K for every child in the city of Philadelphia. However, what we know is once those kids have high quality, they're much less likely to need special education. They're less likely to get into trouble. And so the long-term effect is it'll cost us a lot less in the future.
But serving as you do as executive director, what gives you cause for hope or optimism?
Well, anybody who was watching the gubernatorial election could see that education was a really big issue.
For the governor. He has to work with a legislature, though.
That's true. But what was different this time around, education, when he talks about education, he includes pre-K, right? So the governor's talking about it. The president is talking about it. The mayoral candidates were all talking about it. So really what's happening now is that our policy is beginning to catch up with what research tells us is best practice. And so I'm excited about the future. The governor's proposed a huge expansion for pre-K counts and Head Start in the state of Pennsylvania. And there's a lot of indication that the majority of electeds in the General Assembly really support this issue. So the question is not, are we going to support pre-K? It's at what level?
Sharon Easterling, thanks so much for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Sharon Easterling is Executive Director of the Delaware Valley Association for the Education of Young Children.
I believe the children are our future. Teach them well and let them lead the way. Show them all the beauty they possess inside.
Taking a look at this evening's headlines, a Vatican official with a role in organizing Pope Francis's September visit to Philadelphia is under investigation in Italy. Archbishop Vincenzo Paglia is reportedly among 10 people under investigation over the sale of a castle in his former diocese of Terni in central Italy. No charges have been filed. Philadelphia Archbishop Charles Chaput says he will pray for Paglia. Federal Emergency Management Agency officials say they're reviewing flood insurance claims of Superstorm Sandy victims. FEMA disclosed today that the agency is mailing letters to some 142,000 National Flood Insurance Protection policyholders. A high-ranking Pennsylvania state senator from Allentown who's facing a drunken driving charge is back in public, 4 weeks after being injured in a motorcycle accident. The Allentown Morning Call reports that Senator Pat Brown appeared yesterday at a campaign fundraiser. He's scheduled for a preliminary hearing next month on misdemeanor charges of driving under the influence. Partly cloudy, 85 degrees on Independence Mall. It's 6:15. You're listening to NewsWorks Tonight on WHYY. Partly cloudy skies overnight, falling back to 67 degrees. Tomorrow, partly sunny. There's a 30% chance of late day showers, high again in the mid-80s. Rain likely on Sunday, high 80 degrees, and showers Monday, cooler, high 66. Still ahead, double-decker bus tours in Philadelphia are traveling with a twist this year, live music.
People driving by or walking by, you know, get a sense that something's happening on board this bus. There's something fun happening.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Newman University supports WHYY and encourages listeners to discover how a master's degree in pastoral clinical mental health counseling can help prepare adults for professional licensure and roles in community counseling. Designed to integrate psychology and spirituality, this ecumenical program is open to people of all faith traditions. There's an information session on June 3rd at Newman's campus in Delaware County. Details are available at newman.edu.
If music be the food of love, this book of Shakespeare quotes I just found must be the appetizer. I'm Peter Sagal. This week on Wait, Wait, it's E Street band drummer Max Weinberg, soul diva Toni Braxton, New Orleans genius trombone Shorty, funk founder George Clinton, and the last surviving member of the Ramones. They don't all play together. That would be weird, but they do talk. Join us for the news quiz from NPR.
Tomorrow at 10 a.m. and 4 p.m. on WHYY.
The Franklin Institute supports WHYY and is now featuring the exhibit Genghis Khan, Bring the Legend to Life. From the lush grasslands of Mongolia to the steps of the Franklin Institute, Genghis Khan. Visitors can enter the tents, battlegrounds, and marketplaces of a vanished world and see more than 200 rare artifacts, including gold jewelry, weaponry, silk robes, monuments, and documents nearly 1,000 years old. Genghis Khan at the Franklin Institute, where the legend comes to life. Learn more at fi.edu.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. Less than 4% of Americans identify as LGBT, but you wouldn't arrive at anything remotely close to that figure by asking the public to venture their estimate. Let's dive into the numbers with Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup poll. Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Well, what would the public venture?
23%. And that's the question, what percent of Americans would you say are gay or lesbian? That's how we ask it. We had asked that question a few years ago, and actually it was 25% then. But we also asked it way back in the early part of the previous decade, and the numbers were about the same back then. So we haven't seen a lot of change in what Americans perceive. And what Americans perceive when we ask them to come up with these numbers is vastly wrong compared to, as you say, what we get when we actually ask adults if they personally do identify as LGBT.
And what are among the variables that account for that wide disparity?
Dave, I would say the number one thing is education. We have, to be fair, a general innumeracy among the American public. We also find Americans significantly overestimate what percent of Americans are black when we've asked that question in the past. They significantly overestimate what percent are Jewish. So it perhaps isn't unusual. When we ask this group, we get a significant overestimate as well. When we do look at education, the lowest estimates come with Americans who have postgraduate education. However, even among those Americans with postgraduate degrees, 15% is the guess, their guess about what percent of Americans are LGBT.
I'm wondering to what extent media might play a role in this.
You know, that's a very interesting question. Clearly, we have seen much more of a portrayal of openly gay or lesbian characters, not only in movies, but on television situation comedies and other kind of television programming, much more open discussion of it in general. But as I said, when we go back even to the early 2000s, when it was not nearly as common to be portrayed in the media, that is gay and lesbian characters, we still had Americans guessing in the low 20% about the percent. So I'm not sure that the increase in what we've seen in movies, on television, and so forth is really responsible for it.
Frank, Irish voters this week legalized same-sex marriage by an overwhelming majority. If there were to be a vote in the United States, same-sex marriage would likely win as well. Do you have new data on just how fast American attitudes on this issue have evolved?
Yeah, it's been remarkable. Jeb Bush, the other day when he was asked about it, said this has been just a remarkably fast shift. And indeed, that's what we have seen in our data. 60% is the current number. 60% of Americans say yes, same-sex marriages should be valid and legal, same rights as traditional marriages. And just a few years ago, that was below 50%. We don't have to go back very far. And if we go back even, you know, a decade or two ago, the percent who favored same-sex marriage was in the 40% range. And then we go back to when we first started asking the questions in the latter part of the 1990s, and it was as low as 27%.
60% is an all-time high?
That's right, the all-time high. We also ask a different question: should gay or lesbian relations be morally acceptable, or do you perceive them as morally acceptable? That, since 2001, has undergone a 23-point shift from 40%, who back in 2001 said yes, gay and lesbian relations are morally acceptable, to 63% in the survey that we just completed.
With that, I'm wondering, what percent of American Catholics approve of same-sex marriage?
Catholics in the U.S., in our most recent survey, even higher than average. 65% of Catholics say yes to same-sex marriage, and as we mentioned, 60% of the overall public. The people, religiously speaking, who are low are Protestants, who are down in the 40% approval. But American Catholics, actually, and of course this would probably cause dismay on the part of the Vatican as well, are more liberal on this issue even than the average American.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport, editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. If you're considering weekend plans and you happen to be a nerd, consider this. Geeks of all stripes are readying for Sunday's J1 convention, and as WHYY's Todd Bookman reports, it's a chance for fans of anime, comic books, costumes, and nerd-inspired music to mix and mingle.
Nerd music isn't a genre with its own Grammy category yet, but more than 1,000 people are expected to come out for this weekend's convention in West Philly.
Yeah, Mario's back, out to save that crazy Princess Daisy. By now he's sick of
there may be live performances of Super Mario songs, remixed video game sounds, along with some anime backing music, but even if that's not your thing, J1 will have vendors, expert panels, video game competitions, and a cosplay contest. That's when you dress up as your favorite character. It's known to get a little racy. Jason Richardson has been putting these events on for a few years. He says even the geek curious should feel welcome.
You know, you just kind of become a geek. But at the same time, everybody's a geek. You can be a geek about anything.
Richardson adds the mainstreaming of nerd culture, from Hollywood blockbusters based on comic books to CBS's The Big Bang Theory, has made some hardcore nerds a little uncomfortable, but that on the whole, a bigger community of fans is good for all involved with the scene. For WHYY News, I'm Todd Bookman.
Tourist season is heating up in our region, and with it comes a familiar fixture on Philadelphia's historic streets, the double-decker bus tour. This year, an enterprising tour guide is taking that bus experience to a new level. WHYY's Kimberly Haas took a ride with the double-decker music series.
But this building ahead of us, built between 1871 and 1901.
Philadelphia is known for its historical sites and tours. It's also becoming a focal point for all kinds of indie music. So tour guide Sebastian Petsu decided to combine the two, and with the arts organization Bowerbird as co-producer, has launched the Double Decker music series.
I warm up the crowd with a little bit of history. We'll drive around for maybe about a half hour, just me talking about different sites, and then we just do a set change from tour guiding mode to concert stage mode, and then we continue driving. So the venue kind of changes as we're driving through the city.
And while cruising through the city, Sebastian says the concert will add to the fun of visitors both on and off the bus.
People driving by or walking by, you know, get a sense that something's happening on board this bus, there's something fun happening. But I don't want to, you know, disturb people. I want to be like one of those people that drives around with their windows down and their stereo blasting, just, you know, shakes the inside of your house. No, it's not like that.
Percussionist and beatmaker Christopher Sean Powell plays with the group's Man Man and Adventure Drum. For his solo double-decker bus show on Sunday, he thinks the setting will inspire the improvisation that's a hallmark of his music.
This is a brand new thing for a lot of people to experience, this type of show. It's location-based in a way. I mean, at this point, it is actually a moving location, which is even more exciting. So yeah, it's brand new, and I like the idea of improvising and building something new on the spot.
You can't say I'll see you. You have to know it's true.
The other group on Sunday's bill is the folk duo with the Sunflights. For their set, Claire Duncombe and Natalie Butts have a few other considerations in mind.
I'm going to wear good shoes. I might wear a flowy top.
Yes.
I might wear my hair down. And kind of embrace the visceral experience of being on a bus playing. It just has, like, the effect of a movie. So I was kind of feeling like we're going to be a live soundtrack in a way.
The Double Decker Music Series rolls through the city on several Sunday evenings this summer. For WHYY, I'm Kimberly Haas.
Finally, if all that bus riding makes you hungry, there's a little steak shop in Camden that's getting quite a lot of attention. Donkey's Place opened more than 70 years ago. Long known for its uniquely excellent cheesesteaks, proprietor Robert Lucas knows that more attention is coming soon. On Sunday night, an episode of Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown, recorded this winter, will air on CNN. In a preview, the food guru declares that the best Philly cheesesteak might well come from Donkey's Place. Lucas is diplomatic around the suggestion that his sandwich beat those in Philly.
You know, I don't say it's better than theirs. I say it's different than theirs. They do a good job. We do, too.
Now, we here at WHYY also thought giving the title to a cheesesteak from New Jersey deserved some scrutiny, and we had little trouble rounding up volunteers in the newsroom for a taste test.
Are there whiz on all these?
No, it's real cheese.
Oh, thank God.
Come on.
The sight of a round steak sandwich initially drew some jeers.
Wait, why is that a roll?
It's like a Kaiser roll, but it looks like it's...
That's not a cheesesteak then, right?
Just wait until you taste it.
It's going to be on like a roll.
We're actually looking at beef and beer right now.
Yeah.
But it's tough to argue with the result.
It's not bad.
This is really good, though.
Still, this is Philadelphia, and a room with 10 people tasting cheesesteaks will yield 20 opinions.
I think you're hitting on the right question, though. Is this a cheesesteak?
No.
And if not, why?
It's a sandwich.
Because it's a Kaiser roll.
It's a sandwich.
In the poppy seeds, that doesn't make any sense even to me.
I mean, and it tastes like it's got gravy on there.
It does.
Yeah. Like it's got beef. It's a roast beef sandwich.
That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help this week from Brett Rader. Our news director is Eugene Son. At the helm this week, Al Banks and Adam Staniszewski. Joyce Lieberman is our radio engineering supervisor. Our chief content officer is Christine Dempsey. Chris Atulo is WHYY's vice president of news and civic dialogue. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us and have a great weekend. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
Fox Chase Cancer Center is a proud supporter of WHYY. One of the newest advances in the fight against cancer is immunotherapy, a treatment that unleashes your body's own immune system so it can better fight cancer cells. Early results from studies at Fox Chase and other centers show promise, even in patients who did not respond to other treatments. Part of Temple Health, Fox Chase Cancer Center now offers next business day appointments. Learn more at 888-FOX-CHASE or foxchase.org.
For the record, Annie, you flirted with me. You made me feel like you really liked me, which was really unfair.
That's Chris O'Dowd as a jilted police officer in Bridesmaids, which made him famous in America. The third season of his autobiographical TV series Moon Boy is now streaming on Hulu. An interview with Chris O'Dowd on the next Fresh Air.
Tonight at 7 on WHYY-FM.